Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Hello, my name is Dr. Christian Heim.
And my name is Dr. Caroline Heim.
We've got some exciting news.
We'll be talking about all things relationship.
All things relationship.
All things relationship.
That's a lot to talk about, Caroline.
Well, we've got a lot of talk shows to talk about it.
We have a lot of talk shows to talk about it. But what we are going to do is we're going to look at a study that has been done on relationships so that everything is backed by the science that we talk about here. And then we'll be looking at how you can apply some of that science into your life and into your relationship. And we will be looking at those relationship issues that perhaps we all come across and need a little bit of help in from time to time, Caroline.
Yeah, so it's really for people that are perhaps struggling in their relationship or want to make their relationship better, whether you're just starting out in a relationship, you're 20 years in, you're 50 years in. It's actually for anyone that's in a relationship, in a long-term relationship or wants to be in a long-term relationship.
And it's not only for people who are struggling, not only for people who are looking at a relationship, but if you're in a good relationship, hey, there's nothing wrong with making a good thing better.
Absolutely.
So we will see you, or you will hear us, on Friday night, 9 p.m.
Friday night, ET, so New York time, at 9 p.m.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Christian Heim.
And I'm Dr. Caroline Heim.
And I'm a clinical psychiatrist.
And I'm an associate professor. Welcome to episode 6 of our Resilient Relationships talk show. And today, our topic is, have you ever considered divorce?
Have you ever considered divorce? What a question. And this is a question that we're putting to people who've been married for more than 40 years. So we're going to have to hear their insights on this one.
We most definitely do. It is a really big question.
It is a really big question. And as always, we're here to bring you the science, some of the stories and some tips at the end. But I'm particularly interested to hear what the couples had to say.
Yeah, we've got some really interesting responses to that. So all the evidence from today's show comes from our 180 coupled individuals that we interviewed in long, in-depth interviews from all over the world. And we did ask them the question, have you ever considered divorce? And then we asked them, if they said yes, we asked them why. And if they said no, we asked them why not.
All right. I actually like that format because it's pretty thorough when you're interviewing people. To say, have you considered divorce? We get into definition problems there. And how strongly, how seriously have you considered divorce? Now, these are couples that have been together more than 40 years. Now, we hold them up as shining examples of what we'd like relationships to be. But let's face it, they had tough times. They had to go through difficult times. And there would have been some times that they thought that they didn't make it. And I suppose that's a bit of what we're talking about today.
Yeah, most definitely. And we have talked about that in another podcast, the threats that these couples went under. And obviously, that was a threat for quite a few of them.
It is, but a threat is something different. Considering divorce. A threat can actually unite you. If it's something from outside of you, you can team up against the threat. But considering divorce is going to the root contract of what a relationship is. Are we going to get through this, or have I got in the back of my mind that, you know what, if I don't get what I want here, I'll be out of here. Although we have talked about the threats, threats can, of course, put on pressure so that people feel the need to be torn apart. But considering divorce is more of an individual question, the way I see it anyway.
Yeah, most definitely an individual question. And the thoughts that go on in your head, and some thoughts are verbalized and some are just thoughts in the head about divorce. And the couples talk about that too.
So I'd like us to get straight into
it. Okay, I think we just jump into it today. Okay, so we did ask them the question, have you ever considered divorce? And I'll just give you the percentages first because they're really quite interesting.
So the percentage of people who have considered divorce?
Yeah, so we're looking first at those that have never considered divorce. Were 82% of the couples were those who have never considered divorce. 9% had seriously considered divorce. And another 9% said that it was actually, one of the couple said, it's not a serious thought, just an angry thought.
Okay, I'm actually really glad that it's been divided up that way. I'm surprised that it's so high. 82% did not consider divorce. And that speaks to me of the strength of their commitment. Also, we've been talking to people who've been together 40 plus years, so they've already weathered a lot of things. But I'm also glad that people sort of said, yes, I had thought about it seriously, 9%. And another 9% said, look, you know, it's a thought. I get that thought every now and again, but hey, it's gone no further than that.
Yeah, exactly. And they were talking about it. I'm just so angry at him, or I'm angry at her, and oh well, I'm just going to show them. I'm going to leave. And it's in that heat of that moment, in that really big conflict moment, or I just can't cope with this level of whatever at the moment. What are my options? Oh, maybe I will leave. You know, but a lot of them said they were angry thoughts. Another couple said, well, they were just passing thoughts. You know, and also there's pressure from media.
There is pressure from media, but I just want to put this in context for the people who are out there listening, because if you're out there listening and you have a relationship that's already gotten through the first 6 months, then this question is very relevant to you, but it's not as though your commitment is not going to be there. So why do I say that? Because I have seen a few cases of people who have gotten married and they've gotten divorced within 6 months.
6 months?
6 months, yeah. And wow. When something like that happens, it means that there's something that has gone wrong. And they found out kind of as soon as they got married. So big surprises. People who have... so it's usually a very adventurous way of expressing their sexuality that the other person wasn't ready for, and it wasn't talked about before marriage. But people who have been in a relationship for longer get to know each other, so that thought of divorce gets less and less as their commitment grows stronger and stronger.
Yeah. That's really interesting. So why don't we go to the results of why the couples, actually the 9% of couples that said that had seriously considered divorce and why they had seriously considered it. Because there was a range of reasons, but interestingly, the strongest reason was, and I'll actually do a quote on this one. I think that's the best thing to do. This is actually from Richard and Pearl. They've been married 42 years. And Richard said, I did think of separation. There are times when I felt I was having such a destructive emotional impact on my wife. It may be better if I wasn't there. So that was because he had a mental illness and he was just, he was never physically abusive or anything, or even emotionally abusive. He said it was the thoughts in his head. And Pearl was quick to say, it's the thoughts in his head telling him this, you know. And he wanted to leave because it'd be better for her.
Yeah, and straight away that sort of puts our idea of why people divorce on its head. And it's a bit of a generational effect, because whenever we ask the question, have you ever considered divorce? It's in the context of, are you getting a good enough deal? Are you getting what you want? And if you're not getting what you want, then you consider divorce. But what you just said about Richard was he was already thinking about his wife, Pearl. Was yeah. she getting a good enough deal? Maybe I should separate from her because she wasn't getting a good enough deal.
Absolutely.
That shows yeah. some generosity there right off the bat.
Yeah. So that actually was interesting, the most frequent reason to consider divorce. So it wasn't necessarily discontent with the partner, but a feeling of inadequacy in themselves. And I'd like to share another story from Ted and Christine, who've been married for 50 years. Complete opposite personality types. Very, very different. I could see it in the interview too. And Ted said, I thought she'd be better off without me because, you know, I thought she would be better off without me because, you know, I thought I'm not that outgoing a person. But, you know, it's the last thing that I wanted to happen.
So that's the same situation yeah. as Richard, thinking about his wife
yeah.
and thinking that she may be better off without him.
Yeah, yeah. And others felt the societal pressure. It's that voice in your head. The world tells you just walk if you're not happy. That's Sharon and Bob, who've been married for 46 years.
Yeah, okay. But right there, we've got that juxtaposition. The societal pressure is just walk if you're not happy. Whereas both the cases that you've given us now was I may walk because she's not happy.
Mm.
So there's a generosity there already that I think we can all learn from.
Yeah, most definitely. So, yeah, that was the main reason for actually really seriously considering divorce. There were other issues. There were cultural issues that came into it. There were communication issues. I mean, there's always going to be lots of different issues in the heat of the moment too.
Yeah, but what you're sharing here is that the main issue that people were considering divorce was thinking that they weren't good enough for their partner.
So it's actually going back to our glue findings, which is number two of people staying together was altruism. So thinking of the other person's needs
thinking
over their
the
own.
The other person, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that is a connection. They had that altruism to think in terms of what the other person needs.
That's right. Yep. Okay, so let's move on to the next. Well, you're having a coffee here. Christian's having a coffee, so we're hearing a little bit of gulping in the background. Which is kind of enjoyable. We're going to do this over a coffee from now on, just to make it a little bit more conversation. Okay, so let's move on to the next aspect, which I think is the most interesting question.
And what's that?
When they said, no, we've never thought of divorce.
Yes.
Then we actually asked them, well, why? Why haven't you thought of divorce?
Okay.
And so we actually had 10 top responses to that.
Okay. Okay, so are we moving away from people who have thought about divorce?
Yeah, or did you want to stay with that?
Yeah, I think we've got to stay with that.
Okay.
Because we're going to the flip side of the coin, I think a bit quickly.
Okay.
So what we have is the reasons for people considering divorce has to do with their partner's well-being, and that's a new one on all of us in today's society, in a sense, and that holds a lot of lessons in itself.
Which are?
well, normally, as you said, the societal pressure is, if you're not getting what you want, to walk.
Yeah.
But do we have any example of that? Of somebody who has considered divorce because they weren't getting what they wanted.
Yeah, we do have a few examples of that. We have one couple, actually, that did separate. Well, actually, two couples that separated for 6 months.
Okay.
One was because previous child. So this was a second marriage. Her first marriage had only lasted for about 3 years, but she did have two children that the new husband was then bringing up. They had still been married, this couple that I interviewed, over 40 years. But then there are parental issues. They weren't on the same page with parenting. There wasn't an acceptance with the children. So they separated for 6 months. And then there was another situation where it was a communication issue. They really did not get on very well. One actually left for a while, the female left for a while because she just said that she wasn't getting her needs met. And then she came back.
Okay. Do you know what sort of needs?
No, they didn't share necessarily about that.
Okay. But that's more what we see, let's say, in couples therapy, that people are not getting their needs met.
Mm.
One of the good things about couples work this century is that we frame things in terms of needs, so that if people can express their needs and communicate their needs and get their needs met, then you've basically got a good union between two people.
Yeah, so it is about getting needs met. But then it's not all, it's also that idea of, well, if I'm not getting what I need and you're not giving it to me, isn't there room then for working things out together and coming to a we state instead of two individuals living together?
That's exactly right. That's the aim of therapy, to see what you can do to get people to fulfill each other's needs so that they feel more together. Because if you've got one person fulfilling your needs and the other person is fulfilling your needs, then you get to that state of togetherness.
So he's not giving me what I want, or she's not giving me what I want or need, let's talk about this. And work out how I can fulfill them, or work out what we need to move forward together.
Yeah, but I'm still getting the impression that in this survey, these interviews, that was a minority of cases.
It was.
It was still the people who felt, I'm not good enough for the other person, and it was mainly the males who felt that they felt the need to separate there. So to me, there's a bit of a generational effect there, the idea of fulfilling somebody else's needs, I won't say it's a thing of the past, but it's something that we can learn from the past.
Yeah, most definitely. Going back to altruism again. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Definitely. Okay, shall we move on to the next section?
Okay.
Because that was actually the majority of the responses, was 82 that had never considered divorce. And I guess, you know, we've got all these stats and we've got all these data on this, but the question that was really fun and interesting for me to ask, the most interesting question was, well, why haven't you considered divorce? What was it that was, you know, why didn't that thought even really come into your head? What are your values behind things like that decision?
Yeah,
so I'm going to go through the top 10 and I'll just go through them one at a time. There were top four that were the significant ones, and the others were lower percentages. So 18% of them said it's a forever deal. That was number one. It's a forever deal.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't consider it because it is a forever deal. And this again is cultural, because we had I interviewed three different Italian heritage couples that said, well, divorce isn't considered in my religion or in my heritage. And I had some couples from the Philippines that also said that. So they said their advice for other people was actually not even to consider it, but that was also culturally and even religiously spoken about.
Okay, so rather than saying that it's cultural, I'd say it's culturally informed. Perhaps some cultures see marriage as more binding than others. I got to say, I'm questioning that as well. Religions tend to mean that people have more commitment, but the whole idea of it being a forever deal really comes down to our number one glue secret, which is commitment. I'm happy to see that people actually took that commitment seriously. So in other words, when you make that vow, which was the case because we were interviewing married couples, it was taken seriously, and so that contract does become important. And we've spoken about this before, how it's not the written contract that's important, it's expression of this contract on a day-to-day basis for people. But I suppose that's the advantage that marriage actually gives over people who are cohabitating, which is why divorce rates are actually lower than separation rates of people who are cohabitating. Because there is that commitment, there is a contract that people go back to, and it's a considered thing at the beginning, but then gets worked out on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, most definitely. Okay, so forever deal.
Forever deal.
One. So number two is, why would you? 16% of people said, well, when I said, well, have you ever considered divorce and why not? They said, well, why would you?
Yeah. So they're having a great time.
Yeah, I really think they are having a really great time. I did actually want to share a story from Gary and Ruth, though, that had that response. Gary's from the USA and Ruth is from Australia, so a cross-cultural marriage. They're married for 40 years. And this is actually something he said that really quite shocked me. He said, to me, divorce is like tearing a body apart. A body apart. So to me, divorce is like tearing a body apart because we are one. So divorce is saying, no, you're not one. We're going to rip you apart.
Yeah.
It's pretty extreme.
Yeah. I've had people in therapy with me say it basically feels like that. That have been through a divorce, okay. Yes. And that basically in society we're underestimating just the devastating cost and pain of divorce. Why would you consider divorce when it is so painful? It's actually a very hard thing to do. People do feel ripped up.
Yeah. And I did actually interview two couples that it was their second marriage and both of them talked about that pain too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So number three is 16% also said a vow is a vow. So there is this, again, we're going back to commitment, aren't we?
Yes, we are. Yeah.
Saying, no, some of them said, look, I made this commitment in front of a group of witnesses, some even said, you know. So it's a contractual arrangement or whatever you want to look at it, but I made vows, you know, that it's a forever thing and in sickness and health and all those traditional vows or whatever vows are spoken.
Yeah. But in today's society, we like to hear that people are staying together because they're having fun.
That's true.
Like your other group. And I'm like, why would you? I'm having a great time here.
That's true.
Whereas the idea of a commitment, I won't say it sounds distasteful, but staying together just for the commitment, and I have people tell me this in therapy, you know, that's dissatisfying. I don't want him to stay with me just because he made a vow.
Yeah.
I want him to stay with me because he's having a great time.
That's right.
And I want to stay with him because I'm having a great time. Now, when I say a great time, I don't mean fun only. I also mean personal growth and going through things together and that wonderful feeling of helping somebody else. So a great time has to do with lots of different things together. And I suppose I want to tie the two together to say that if you have a framework of commitment, you actually then end up in a space where not only can you have fun, but you have free personal growth. Now, personal growth means that I've got to reveal some not so nice things about me, but if I'm afraid that you're going to leave me, then I'll keep them to myself, which means that we're not making that growth together as people. Mm-hmm. Whereas if we have a commitment framework that says, no, we're together here, it's a together deal, it's a forever thing, we made those vows, as these people are saying, then I can relax and say, yeah, okay, I can show a few things here and I can talk about a few things and we can explore a few things without it going to that deal-breaking area.
Yeah, and it's also, I guess, going back to the vows and that moment where you were madly in love, you know, and that you made that commitment. So it's also going back to that, oh, yeah, that's what we actually are, that's actually who we are.
Yes. Yeah. Not the idea that we were madly in love, but this is why we still are madly in love.
That's exactly right, yeah. You know, I need to qualify that. Or where is the love, finding the love that's been covered up by hurt and blame and all sorts of things that get layered on top and the lists of wrongs, you know?
Oh, that was so well put, actually. In fact, we could do another podcast on that because it's one of those superficial questions. Are you still in love or is that something of the past?
Yeah.
And the way that you expressed it then, there are things, layers of hurt or layers of problems or layers of complexity that actually bury the love. But I would argue that the love is still underneath there. So if we can get through some of those layers, perhaps that madly in love state is still there.
Sounds great. Okay, so the next aspect is number four, which is 13% of them said the kids would suffer. So obviously a lot of the people that we interviewed were parents, you know, so yeah.
Again, hearing something like we're staying together for the kids sounds distasteful, but it does, again, point to underlying altruism, that my life is not my own. I'm not here just for myself. I'm here for my partner, but I'm also here for my kids. And so if you have two kids, say, then you as a marriage partner are in a way responsible not just for your own happiness, but you contribute very strongly to the happiness of at least three other people. And that I believe, does need to be part of the equation.
Yeah. It's really interesting because we did actually ask the question in our survey, which is of 1,112 coupled individuals. We actually asked them, did your happiness level, we're talking about happiness then, did your happiness and contentment levels go down or up when the kids left? And the majority said it went up.
Their happiness went up when the kids left.
Yeah. So that's just a little bit of an aside. But we didn't add that to our last one, so I wanted to throw that one in.
Oh, okay.
Because we're talking about kids.
Now that means they had more time for each other, a bit more privacy.
That's right. Exactly. Okay. Let's go on to the next one, which is, what are we up to? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 9% said the grass is not greener elsewhere.
Okay, so we're going through a list of the reasons why people did not consider divorce. And I'm finding these really instructive. It's because 82% of people said they did not consider divorce. And you kind of think they had something going on that was right. And here are some of the insights. And they are actually speaking to our whole attitude in divorce in all of society. And this idea that the grass is not always green on the other side, I find vital in this whole discussion.
Yeah. Why is that? What is it about it?
Because when people choose to divorce, in my experience as a psychiatrist, I found that it is with the belief that the grass is going to be greener, that they're going to get a better relationship, that they're going to have another chance of happiness. And it can happen. But unfortunately, the statistics show that a second relationship or a second marriage actually has more chance of breaking up than the first marriage did.
Yes.
So in other words, when you're going through a second round, it's actually harder.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we know couples that are very happy in their second marriage, too.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
We do. So,
really
so this is not a rule. These are the people that I see have seen just how important a marriage is, and they're going to go, you know what, I'm not going to let go this time.
Oh, that's right. Ergun and Anne, they were from Turkey and France, and they were just, one of my second marriage couples, and they were just committed to each other. They were just sort of, well, I wasn't honest with my first wife, or there were trust issues there, and we just put it all out on the table, and we're not going to go that direction. So everything's out on the table now, and we're just going to share absolutely everything with each other.
And this tends to be the second marriages that do well. Mm. The people who do some soul searching, take responsibility and said, you know what, I screwed up. I could have done better. And so they take that opportunity and say, from now on, we can actually do better. And I suppose one of the things that I say to people that I'm working with in couples therapy is, you can have your second chance now.
Mm.
You can start being honest with each other now.
That's right, within the actual first marriage.
I got to say, it's hard, right?
Yeah.
Okay, because there are a lot of pride issues, and people build walls around them that are years thick, and construct a narrative that looks right, and to say something like, well, that's not really me, or I've constructed something for years now, that's actually very hurtful. And I'm not saying it's easy. None of what we talk about here is easy. But it can be worthwhile.
Yeah, that's really good. Thanks for sharing that. That's really important.
Mind you, sometimes two sheep, they look over the fence and you know what?
Yeah. Well, actually, I mean, we need to have a look at that. Yeah. In the natural world.
Well, okay. All right. But if you are in a relationship that has problems, and you sit down and you talk about things, or you find some therapy, that is your fence. And on the other side of your fence of therapy or talking or being honest or going through some hurtful times, there is actually greener grass. The greener grass can be for the two of you after a prickly barbed wire fence that you needed to go through, but that feeling of being honest and being actually able to be yourself is like no other, particularly when you're coupling that with somebody else who you are facilitating to be themselves. Because remember, that person in front of you actually fell in love with you and wanted you, and you wanted them. So to rekindle that, is making your own grass greener.
I love that idea. So, look, there's a big fence there. It even might have barbed wire over it. But we're going to climb it together and have that green grass together. I love that idea.
That's great. That's a good analogy, yeah.
Okay, so number six is I'm still in love, when we talked about love. That was 8% of the people said, I'm still in love.
Yeah, so I suppose that's related to why would you?
Yeah.
Because I'm enjoying myself here. I'm getting what I want. This person is everything that I wanted, and I'm being everything that this person wanted me to be.
Mm.
And I'm going to say a very couple therapist type things, but it is the relationships where both parties are expressing their needs and fulfilling their needs and walking together that actually do well.
Yeah. Okay. That's good to know. All right. So number seven is because of what was modeled to us. So modeling from parents, obviously.
Yeah.
What was modeled. This was modeled. So we just replicate that then. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. But it wasn't only the ones that had modeling of parents that were together, but parents that had divorced. And there were some couples that actually said, I saw, what happened to my family, and I was determined just to not have a divorce.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. That's actually very exciting, because to me, that shows the importance of individual choice.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of us that have had traumatic childhoods, a lot of us that have had childhoods that have gone wrong, but you can actually react against that rather than go with the flow. It's like two brothers were interviewed by police. One ended up in jail. One ended up putting together a center for juvenile offenders. And one said, well, of course I ended up in jail. What did you expect? I had a father who was a criminal. And the other one said, well, of course I put together a center for juvenile offenders because I had a father who was a criminal and I wanted to do something about that.
Yeah.
So if you had parents that modeled a bad relationship to you, you can say, okay, I learnt what I don't want to do.
Yeah, so it's either that idea of replicate or rebel. And you can quite do it defiantly too, I'm not going to go there. No.
Some defiance is actually really, really good. And this comes to an aphorism that we have, that sometimes you've got to play you and me against the world.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
I know there are problems out there. I know our parents didn't make it, but you and me, we're going to give it a go and we're going to succeed.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I love that. That's great to bring in there.
Yeah, before we go on, however, this does bring in a question about all of society, because divorce is becoming more and more prevalent, and it's coming down a bit at the moment because the marriage rate is going down.
It's also going down.
Yeah. But you can see that from one generation to the next that divorce has become more and more normalized, so we're heading more and more in this direction. And I suppose I bring that up to encourage people to take their own destiny by the scruff of the neck and actually say, what do we actually want?
Mm.
How do you want our relationship to look like in 10 years' time? And the thing is that there's something about human nature that just does things automatically, and we kind of expect things to work out automatically. But today, more than ever, it takes intention, it takes a determination, and it actually takes a plan. So I'd encourage anybody out there, doesn't matter how long you've been together, to have a conversation that basically says, where would you like our relationship to be in 10 years' time?
Yeah.
Is there anything that I need to change to facilitate that for you?
Mm, that's a great tip.
Because, boy, I want to tell you a few things that you could do to facilitate that for me.
Oh, yes. There is a hidden objective in that question. I could see it straight away, Christian. Yeah. So, it is a really good thing, because it's that building of that. It goes back to the you and me against the world, creating that world for you. You don't have to be influenced by the parental modeling or the worldly modeling and all the things that you see in the films and in the television shows, on the Netflix series. This is your choice. You have much more choice than you think that you have.
And I'm laboring this a little bit because, as a scientist, people tend to think that I think it's all random, or we just go with the flow. But the science itself is finding out that we have a lot more choice in life than we are acknowledging. We all make thousands of choices every day as to where we go, if we're going to turn a light on or not, what we're going to wear, what we're going to say in our words. That choice actually extends to our whole lives. We can actually shape our lives a whole lot more than we can. I'm not saying entirely, because life does throw things at you that that you didn't plan for, but to use your intention to make the choices that you want here about your relationship with another person is actually very, very powerful.
Yeah. Okay, let's move to number nine now. Oh, no, number eight. We're only up to eight. And this is 6% said, who wants loneliness?
Who wants loneliness?
You're listening to iHealth Radio. iHealth Radio. iHealth Radio. The premier, the one and the only online radio dedicated to healthcare and healthcare-related topics and industries. iHealth Radio. Broadcasting live from the metropolitan New York City area 24/7 with talk shows, debates, interviews, and live reports. Hear it direct from the experts. iHealth Radio, giving you a behind-the-scene look at how your healthcare is conceived and administered. This is iHealth Radio with Hurricane H.
That a lot of lonely people in society would like to be living out themselves. And look, we used to think that loneliness was an old person's problem. Then we found out that middle-aged people are also lonely. We are now finding out that it's the young adults that are the loneliest. And that is very sad. That is very sad, because part of that is an emphasis on career, delaying getting a relationship, but not just a relationship, but a committed relationship where you say, yeah, I want to be with you for a long, long time. And that is really the thing that assuages loneliness, because there are going to be times, and we're going through it now, when it's just the two of you.
It's just the two of us. You know, you're traveling, you're in different countries and this and that, and, you know, family members pass away, parents and everything, and you can even get estranged from siblings. There's all sorts of things that can happen, but yeah, it is the two of you, and that's that unit.
And just having that one person means that you're filling out the human ideal where you can be yourself, but in relationship with somebody. And I'm here to say it's not easy.
No, it isn't.
It never is easy.
You've always got to work through things. We're still working through things. Goodness me.
But it's worth it.
It's very, very much worth it. Actually, I want to give a bit of a loneliness story, because actually there was one couple, Veron and Wayne, who had, they'd been in an affair. And it had only happened 6 months before I interviewed them. So, and I have talked about them in another podcast episode. And he actually said, well, you know, yeah, we considered it. Of course we considered it. But then we thought about it, and we thought, well, then there'd be one lonely person on one island and another person lonely, another lonely person on another island. And we thought that through, and we thought, do we really want that? Do we really want to be on those lonely islands?
Yeah.
You know, or do we want to try and work through this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's very brave.
It was very brave. Mind you, honestly, they were still working through it. Very, very much so. But I'm happy to say, 4 years later now, they are still together.
Oh, that's fantastic.
After the affair.
That's fantastic.
Mm. So they work through things, obviously.
Yeah, and just another aside. I'm full of asides today. But we tend to think of long-term contentment as things have gone right all the time. But studies actually show that what brings about our long-term contentment and things that we call happiness is having worked through difficulties and gotten to the other side. That there's something so satisfying in overcoming an obstacle. And I suppose, look, we've just seen it in the Olympic Games. There's obstacle races. There are opponents that you have to defeat. There are times that you have to beat. These are all obstacles. And that great feeling of, yes, I did it, actually gets augmented in a relationship, because you can say, yeah, we did it together.
Mm. And there's that other lovely couple quote when one of the couples said to me, well, adversity strengthens commitment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that sort of ties in a bit there too.
Yes. And it is that you and me against the world sort of thing. Okay. Whatever they throw against us, we're ready for it.
That's right.
And we'll do it together.
And we'll do it together. Hard as that is sometimes.
Yeah, it is.
But we'll do it together. Okay, let's move to number 9. And that was 5% was actually for religious reasons. And I think we've touched on that before.
Yeah. And I suppose in today's politically correct society, we tend to de-emphasize this. But I can see us going through a wave of appreciating the contribution that religion makes to society and, dare I say it, even to science, so that it is protective. Mind you, I have to say that that protection has waned over the decades. It was more protective to be religiously affiliated 20 years ago than it is now. But still, to have a framework that says, here's the direction that your relationship should be going in, and to have a framework and a community of people that believe that and will uphold that is actually very protective to relationships.
And it's also interesting because, yeah, we've seen the demise of big institutions like the church and such, and so they don't have as much of an influence on decision making. The media has more influence on decision making now. I guess there are more divorces now, but that's also because of the laws too, isn't it?
Also, it's hard to talk about where society actually is at the moment,
yeah,
because our society is actually fragmented. So people who go to religious services are in a different community. People who are online listening to what the influencers are saying, in a sense, are in a different community. People who are at university are in a different community. And all of us walk between these different communities, and it almost looks at different sides of us. And unfortunately, gone is that idea that this is what a whole country expects us all to look like as far as our walk in life is concerned, which is why individual choice becomes more important. You've got to take your destiny by the scruff of your neck and say, this is what I want for our relationship. So what can we do together about it?
I really like that idea of those different communities that have emerged in society. But then you go back to the couple and say, well we're a community.
Yes.
The two of us.
Yes.
And,
yes.
And we're the community. What are our values?
Yes.
What do we value?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's a wonderful way of putting it, that the couple is a community. And it's actually your prime community.
Yeah.
And that, of course, extends to your family community, your immediate family community.
Yeah, of course, when you have kids and that. Okay, great. So the last one in the top 10, I've got some really interesting outliers I want to share, but the last one with only 3% is, this is interesting, too much bother to divorce, cost too much, or, you know, way too much bother. Not going to consider that, yeah.
Okay, that's a beautiful response. But I find them all really very not only instructive, but very important. Could you just sort of go through the top 10? Because I think we've got a lot to learn from these.
Absolutely. So when I asked the question to the people that said that they had never considered divorce, I've asked them the question, have you ever considered divorce? The 82% that said no, there were 10 top responses. Number one, it's a forever deal. Number two, why would you? Number three, a vow is a vow. Number four, the kids would suffer. Number five, the grass is not greener elsewhere. Number six, I'm still in love. Number seven, because of what was modelled to us. Number eight, who wants loneliness? Number nine, for religious reasons. And number 10, it's too much bother.
Yeah. So we started off this podcast with the question, have you ever considered divorce?
Yes.
And one of the things about that is that there are different levels. You can think about it in your mind, you can think about it strongly in your mind, or you can start moving down that direction in your life. But here, we're looking at the flip side. We're looking at the 82% of people who have not considered it, and they're coming up with very practical and very far-reaching, broad, philosophical ideas that I get really excited about.
I know, so I'm going to throw a few more of those in because we had some outlier comments too.
Oh, I love the outliers. Go
okay,
ahead.
All right. So, we've talked about the first one. It's too painful, and we've talked about that already.
Yeah, yeah.
But another one, which was a few couples actually said this, where else have we to go?
Okay.
Yeah, and they just looked at each other, and there was so much love there. I nearly cried. It was just a really beautiful moment. Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Where else have we to go? Another interesting one was I'd lose my security.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So there's that idea of security in marriage, you know, and then you've got security or you're thrown into chaos or whatever.
Yeah, and we're not talking just financial security or relational security. We're talking about emotional security, but also individual security. You, as a person, as an individual, need to be secure in who you are. And I know this sounds strange, but all of us as individuals, we actually find out who we are in the eyes of another person and how they react to who we are. And so to have somebody close to you on a day-to-day basis actually gives you individual security. This is who I am.
Yeah. A lot of the couples use that word security, you know. Even when we talked about arguing with them, you know, it was tough going and there were tempests early on, but they stuck with it, and they always had that security in their marriage, they said.
Yeah.
You know, they just still looked to each other and battled through.
Yeah.
And that gave them that security. Okay, another one was, well, I couldn't live without him or her. And that goes back to the love, that they just couldn't live without them. Another one was, and this was really interesting, this was a couple of lawyers from Australia said, well, you don't just discard something.
Okay.
So it's sort of, you know, that sort of, oh, well, yeah, that it's a commodity sort of a thing, a relationship. And yeah.
So they really valued their relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, they really did. They really valued their relationship.
Okay, and that's actually quite important because your relationship is with another person.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we're getting close to infinite value there.
Yeah, we are actually. That's true. And the last one I want to share is, and this is kind of cute, when I said, you know, the question, have you ever considered divorce? And someone actually said, oh, are we supposed to divorce? Sort of like, is that a rule? So I just wanted to finish off with that because that's quite delightful.
It is quite delightful. It's also a little bit sad because divorce used to be a stigmatized experience.
Yeah.
And then what helped was actually normalizing that so that people didn't feel stigmatized. But there's a sense that perhaps we've now made it a valued experience, that idea that you haven't lived until you've divorced, so that people who have not divorced start to feel inadequate. And I'm only sharing that because I have heard people share that with me in therapy.
Oh, wow.
And I have to assure them that their experience of not having divorced is just as valid an experience, and any experience you have will automatically negate another experience. Now, the reason I'm spending some time on this is because we live in a society that values experiences, and the more experiences you have, the more you live. But we tend to forget that every experience that we have actually takes another experience out of your life.
I'd like to throw in a little bit of an acting story here.
All right,
because
throw
I teach theatre. and because it's a question my students ask me, because they have to play different characters and characters in relationships.
Yes.
And invariably, every year, I get one student saying, oh, so as an actor, I've just got to go out and experience everything in the world so that I can replicate it, because I've felt it and I've experienced it, so I can replicate it on stage.
Yep.
And I say, no, you don't need to go out and experience everything in the world. You just need to use your imagination for those things, experiences that you haven't had. And then we talk about the developing imagination and getting into a character's skin and all of that, and using the given circumstances of the play and the, you know, doing historical research and research in general. So, I mean, I'm not going to go into all of that, but it is that question. Do I have to experience everything to really live, you know, or is that really living?
Yes. Yes. So one of the things is, from what you're saying, it's actually impossible to experience everything.
Well, that's true.
And if you take any experience, let's say we will go and live in Europe for 20 years. There's a good experience. That sounds like a good thing to do. But that means that by having that experience, we're not living in Australia for 20 years. We're not living in Canada for 20 years. And it cuts down a whole lot of other options straight away.
That's right.
And even something like, oh, you haven't lived until you've tried this, this recreational drug.
Yes.
That takes away the experience of, you know what? I've been in control of my mind. all of my life, and I like it that way. And it's another experience.
Yeah, it is. That's true. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, there's a taking away and that can happen. And also, obviously, when they're saying I need to go out and experience everything, they're not talking necessarily about going on lots of, you know, trips overseas and things. They are. They're talking about the things that you're talking about, recreational drugs and such. They're talking about the heavier experiences.
Yeah, yeah. But people feel judged if we start talking about what you should or should not do. Which is why sometimes I just leave it on a logical basis that if you decide that you are going to become, let's say, an actor, that means you're not going to be an engineer, you're not going to be a nurse, you're not going to be a doctor or a research assistant. Life is vast. It's got an array of experiences, and we can't all experience it. The exciting thing is that, in a sense, we experience it together by living all of our lives. And this is where being authentic to yourself is actually quite important. And to bring it back to a relationship, you find your authentic self in a relationship. Humans are social creatures, so to live that out and to be who we actually are actually does mean being in relationship.
Yeah, it does. And I also like that idea, you know, you've got your life experience, but if you're sharing a life experience with another person in a relationship, you've got all their life experiences too. So your world expands.
Oh, that's amazing. That's right. That's right. And one of the most amazing things is to watch somebody else's growth, because you're just a little bit removed and they're watching your growth. And look, again, people will think I'm advocating for relationships, which I am, but the science in this area is that it's less than 1% of the population that will choose to go through life without a relationship. So I say that...
A love partner, you mean?
A love partner.
A romantic love partner.
A romantic love partner. Somebody really close. The reason that I say that is it shows how overwhelmingly we are social creatures, and it is part of our nature, as difficult as it can be in a relationship, to engage in that battle, that adventure of being in a relationship.
Yeah, it's certainly an adventure, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So where do you want to go from here now, Christian?
Well, are we looking at getting a few tips together?
I think we'll have a few tips together. Yeah, if you've got any tips, that'd be fabulous.
So I've been learning a lot today because, as you know, I didn't know these statistics, which may come as a surprise to people.
We have so much data and we're gradually sort of sorting through it. So obviously a lot of it's in our book and in the two journal articles we now have published in this area. But, yes, this is some data that's just we've just compiled.
And we also want to keep things fresh, so often I like Caroline keeping the data, so you get some honest reactions from me rather than some set reactions. But to me, it is quite significant that 82% of people have not considered divorce
in that relationship. In that demographic, let's clarify that.
So the psychiatrist in me knows that everybody is capable of anything. So what I mean by that is, in a way, you've always got to have a little door open as an escape. And this is just common sense, because if a relationship ends up being abusive and it ends up being very abusive, then do you consider divorce? Yeah, you do.
Yes, absolutely.
You do. Or you at least consider separation. But again, I also have to say I have seen relationships that have worked through abuse issues, and they've worked through that well. But consider it, yeah, it's got to be there, because human nature, unfortunately, has a dark side, and people can take advantage of each other.
And then the security's gone. And this is what the couples were talking about. So if the security's gone, well, you know, that's that, you know.
Then that takes away all that freedom to be yourself.
That's right.
And you start acting in a certain way just to keep the peace.
Yeah, it's a controlled relationship rather than a freedom choice. Yeah.
It is. It is. On the other side is, if you can be yourself, honestly be yourself with somebody else, then you will have this feeling, I believe, of leading a fuller life.
Yeah. Okay, some tips then?
Some tips. Okay, so I suppose what I just went through there is a bit of a definition thing. It's normal to have thoughts of divorce. And what we learned from today's research is it's normal to have thoughts about divorce in those angry moments when you're going through an argument and it's just not going well and you ask yourself, why did I get into this? Is it better that we separate? That's a normal thought to have. And I say that because a lot of people feel guilty if they get that thought. And a thought is just a thought. To have the thought seriously is actually also useful because it means that you value your relationship. So in a sense, people who come to me for couples therapy have thought seriously about divorcing. We have a problem here that we can't get through. By having therapy, they're not divorcing. So they're protecting themselves against something that they thought could happen. So the nice thing about therapy is, particularly when it goes well, you get to see the results of people considering something but being given tools to work through things so that you can move forward.
Yeah, great. So therapy is obviously one option.
Therapy is a good option if you need it.
If you need it, yeah.
Yeah. Your intent and your decision, I think, is much more important.
Okay.
Yeah. So as a therapist, I will actually ask people, well, what do you want?
Mm.
Where do you want to be in 5 years' time? Do you still want to be together?
Mm.
And, you know, mostly in therapy, people tell the truth, but people have good reason not to tell the truth as well. So, but it still becomes a very important thing.
Mm.
So the first tip is if you do think about it, that's okay. The second tip, however, is to make your relationship the kind of relationship where that question becomes irrelevant to you.
Yes.
And I suppose that's why I spent a lot of time with those 10 reasons why people didn't think of divorcing in their relationship.
Because there were some great tips in there, even just the thought of that. Okay, because even the grass is greener, it already says, okay, let's really think this through. Is the grass greener?
That is a particularly good tip because we all have what's called optimism bias, that good things will happen to me, the bad things won't happen. And that means if I find another partner, my relationship is going to be better. And the number of times that I have been told that's not actually the case. If I knew what I know now, I would never have left my wife. I would never have divorced from my husband, whatever it is. So considering divorce may be the catalyst for you to have an honest conversation with your partner as to, hey, where do you want to be in 5 years' time?
Mm.
Where do you want to be in 10 years' time? Can we make that happen?
Okay, great. So that's tip number two, have that honest conversation.
Have that honest conversation. And tip number three is actually to express your needs so that the other person has a chance to fulfill your needs.
Mm.
And what goes along with that, of course, is fulfill your partner's needs.
Yeah.
Because if you're not able to do that, then that door to a divorce just opens a little bit more.
Yeah, there's that idea of express your needs. And I've heard this in couples, you know, where he just left. We were going fine. I thought everything was fine. But then he said, I've had enough of this. And he just left. But we never sat down and talked about it.
Yeah.
He never told me he was struggling or she never said anything about that, you know. And then it was suddenly over.
Yeah. And that is something that happens surprisingly often, that people won't confront all the things that need to be confronted, because I got to tell you, it's a lot of work. Getting over problems and being honest is a lot of work, and there's a lot of hurt to get through. So people often make the decision, nah, I'm out of here, and then they will say that to their partner after they've made that decision, and they close the door to any reconciliation.
Mm.
And that's actually really sad, because therapists do have good tools. And even if you don't go to a therapist, I would say the biggest tip is just to sit down and listen to each other. Listen to your partner for a good 10 or 15 minutes and shut up. Don't have any judgment. Don't say anything about it. Okay, I'm listening. Okay, that was hard to hear. Is there anything else you want to say? Whoa, that's a hard one. Okay, I'm still listening. Is there anything else you want to say? Okay, this has been really hard for me. Could you please say something positive so that I've got a bit of hope here?
Yeah.
And you will go through this unbelievable feeling of firstly feeling despair, but then you sort of think, no, this person's been honest with me And the hope is that we can move forward from that. And then you get your chance to say what you need to say as well. And then that can lead to a session where you actually plan a way forward.
Yeah.
How can we do this?
Yeah.
Now that you've told me your needs, can I fulfill it?
Yeah.
Now that I've told you my needs, can you fulfill it? And it's still going to be work. There's still going to be failures along the way. But the success is if the two of you are still together.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's a really hard point to get to actually be calm enough to do that. Or, I mean, some people just hold things so deeply inside that they don't even know themselves what their thoughts are.
Yes,
you know?
Yes,
so,
yes, thank you for saying that.
And they just feel so uncomfortable. They don't know why.
Yes, yes. And that's where a therapist can help.
Can help unpack it, yeah.
Yeah, because a therapist's job is actually to create a situation of safety so that things can be said, and then ideally a couple will actually reveal themselves, and this is the nicest thing, they find out how much they actually love each other.
Yeah.
Because sitting next to you there is the person that you just found absolutely gorgeous, or that you found was your strength, and it was a person that you fell in love with, and that person is still there under those layers that you were talking about earlier on.
Well, I think that's a really good point to finish off with, that person is right there in front of you still. All right. We have really enjoyed having your company. If you need any material from us, any other material, we have two other podcasts, the College Mental Health podcast and also the Dr. Christian Heim podcast, which is on mental health issues. So do go onto our website, drchristianheim.com, and there's links to all of that. We've got a YouTube channel. We've got a YouTube channel. We've got a blog. We've got everything there. Lots of resources, just lots of resources for healthy relationships and also if you're struggling. We're going to see you next time. We're doing this monthly. We'll be back for another session and another episode in a month's time on resilient relationships.
Until then, take care.
Take care. Bye for now.